Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1257, we present four stories by new Life Rattle writer, Bailey Green. Bailey Green was born in Montreal, Quebec in 1990. She grew up in Saint-Lazare, a small town just west of the island of Montreal. Her parents are both of Scottish origin. Her mother was a stay-at-home mom, and her father a sales manager in the packaging industry. Growing up Anglophone in La Belle Provence, Bailey learned to speak French fluently. She had a happy childhood, spending her summers up at the family's cottage on Lake Louisa, reading, swimming, going for boat rides and picking blueberries with her younger brother Trevor. When she was in her teens, her father unexpectedly lost his job. Her family underwent a huge change as her mother trained to become a yoga teacher to help support the family, and her father started his own photography business. Their strength and love inspired Bailey to chase her dreams. After completing college, where she studied professional theater acting, Bailey was accepted into university and now lives in Mississauga, where she continues to study her craft while pursuing a career as a professional actor, amateur model, passionate writer, and part-time lifeguard. Bailey Green is also, she tells us, a TV addict, ex-smoker, and die-hard sci-fi fan, though I can't imagine where she would find the time. On tonight's program, we begin a series of work tales set in Quebec and told from the viewpoint of a student who juggles school, boyfriends, and minimum wage jobs with a great deal of wry wit and sass. Our first story slips us to the head of the line and inside the entry gates of a raucous family fun center. Let's listen now as Bailey Green reads Zig Zag Zoo tonight on Life Rattle.
Zig Zag Zoo by Bailey Green. Kayla sticks a laminated sign with a cartoon monkey hanging from a vine to the front door. He points up to the sentence, "Désolé, on est au capacité," and then points down to the smaller English translation, "Sorry, we're full." Families jam the entrance to Zig Zag Zoo, a huge indoor play structure and family fun center just west of the island of Montreal. A line snakes from the jungle-themed front desk up to the door. Kayla squishes and ducks through the impatient parents and children. At the reception desk, I press the button under the counter and release the magnet that holds the entrance gate shut. Kayla mutters apologies, swings the gate open, and shuts it behind her. I release the button. The gate locks. An escaped child suddenly hurls his small body into the gate. He wails as his father scoops him up off the floor. The boy's face collapses into sobs as he begs for 5 more minutes, for 1 more trip down the swirly slide, for 1 more blue slushy. Kayla, skirting the father and son, opens the smaller gate at the back of our square control desk. 4 solid counters divide us from the horde. She slams it shut and straightens her yellow t-shirt with the Zig Zag Zoo logo emblazoned across the front. "Holy fuck," Kayla mouths, her bluish-green eyes wide. Over her shoulder, the enormous 3-story play structure seethes with bodies. On the second level, a mother and her baby sit amid the chaos. The baby pushes her face against the black netting that covers the padded frames as her tiny fingers grasp the thick threads. A tuft of blonde hair wobbles on top of her head. The mother sees me looking. She smiles. I nod and return the smile. A family waits by the exit gate on the other side of the cash counter. Little hands drum the counter, and knitted mittens dangle out of their hot sleeves. The little boy who ran into the gate, now bundled in a purple snowsuit, sniffles in his father's arms. Snot courses down his face. Kayla scans the barcodes on their bracelets. Zigzag Zoo takes security seriously. All families have their last name printed on bracelets when they enter. When they leave, we scan the bracelets to ensure that children leave only with their parents and no one else. "How many bracelets did you scan?" I ask. 6, Kayla answers. I slide my eyes back to my cache. An Indian woman glares back at me. "How many are with you?" I ask. "We have 7. "That's fine." I punch in 2 adults, 3 children aged 4 to 12, and 2 children aged 1 to 3. "Have you been to Zigzag Zoo before?" "Yes, we have. Several times." "May I have your last name, please?" I have to shout to her over the chatter, shrieks, and giggles of 200 children. "Sanjeet." I type the name into the database. "First name?" "Pardeep." I scroll down and find the correct Sanjeet and hit select. I slide the debit terminal to her, avoiding the fake fern's leaves. The transaction processes. Bracelets slide out of the printer at the other end of the counter. Kayla catches the end of the ribbon of bracelets as they print and tears them apart. I hop off my bar chair and take half the bracelets. Mrs. Sanjeet heaves a toddler onto the counter and pulls his arm straight. His large brown eyes study me as I carefully wrap the bracelet around his wrist. I peel off the sticker at the end and seal the bracelet. I wrap bracelets around the mother and father's wrists while Kayla finishes the other kids. Kayla pushes the button under the counter and the gate unlocks. "Please make sure you take your shoes off," she says. "Excuse me, why did that family get to go in? The sign says full," shouts a frustrated father from the end of the line. I sigh and turn to the front of the counter. "We are letting people in as people come out, sir. It may be a wait. We're sorry for the inconvenience." "Oh, well," he grumbles. Kayla perches on the other bar chair next to the exit computer. I catch her eyes. Her deadpan expression slays me. I cough to cover a laugh. She picks the split ends of her sunny blonde hair. She shoots an unimpressed look at the line. "They're glaring at us like it's our fault," she says. "I know, right? Like, is this a joke?" I say. "Is this a fucking joke?" she says. "Is this a fucking joke?" I say. Kayla slaps a hand over her mouth to silence her laughter. "So, how's Simon?" Kayla purses her lips and raises her eyebrows. "Ugh, I don't want to talk about Simon." I click a pen against the lime green countertop. "Oh no? Why?" "He's disappeared again, just like he does every Christmas and summer break. I guess we'll see where we stand when school starts again." I stare out at the snow whipping past the windows. "He's a jerk," she says. "I know. But such a pretty jerk. The worst kind of jerk." I laugh and gather my hair up into a ponytail. "Your roots are really dark," Kayla teases. "Don't remind me. I have an appointment in a few days. Back to brunette." "Aw, I liked you as a blonde," Kayla says. "But I'll look like myself again." "Excuse me." The mother from the play structure, holding her baby on her hip, stands at the back of the counter. Her brown hair frizzes from the static electricity that crackles through every plastic tube slide. "Yes, ma'am. Can I help you?" I step down from my chair. "What was your name again?" She taps her finger on the counter. "Bailey." "Right, Bailey. I love that name. I need to find my husband and round up my kids. Would you mind taking her for a few minutes?" She shifts her baby to the other hip. The baby blows a spit bubble. The Cindy Lou Who tuft of hair on top of her head wiggles. "Sure, of course." The mother slides a hand under each armpit and lifts her baby. I reach for the child. As I bring the baby closer to my body, I mimic the mother's stance, allowing both pudgy legs to wrap around my sides. My arm locks under the baby's padded bum, and my hand supports her heavy head. Her plump face turns towards mine with interest. "Thank you so much. I'll be right back." The mother motors off. The baby's mouth hangs open, pink lips glistening with drool. I stare into her blue eyes. A tiny hand pats my cheek before she discovers my shiny metal name tag. I turn to Kayla. Her jaw drops. "I get to hold a baby," I say. "Not fair," she says. I smirk. The baby gurgles.
That was Zig Zag Zoo, written and read by Bailey Green. Tonight's second story moves us into the world of retail work, and, probably for the first time, will have you considering the finesse involved in presenting lacy lingerie to the consumer. Let's listen now as Bailey Green reads her story, Panty Bar.
Panty Bar by Bailey Green. I slide my forearm under a row of perfectly aligned, candy-colored hipster-style panties. With my other hand, I tuck the sides of the panties in and pillow the row. The top of the panty bar must always be pillowed. Each row of panties lies in a long, white, wooden tray. Glitter coats the corners and edges inside each tray, remnants from season after season of bling panties. The panty bar, an enormous white cube, its top covered in underwear in every color and style imaginable, dominates the front room of pink by Victoria's Secret at Square One in Mississauga. Drawers line each side, organized from large down to extra small. During the day, customers destroy our meticulous pillowing in seconds. They swarm the panty bar, yanking, grabbing, and admiring the panties. The mall closes at 9 during the week. The pink girls stay an hour later for closing. No customers, no music, just folding and fixing, primping displays and prepping stock. I reach across a panty tray to the pyramid of white and pink polka-dotted bum mannequins and adjust a neon yellow panty on the lowest row. "How's the launch table?" Sim asks in a loud voice from the back of the store. At cash, she counts the deposits for the day. Piles of bills spread across the counter. "Done," I say. The launch table at the front showcases our brand new sequined hoodies and sweats, part of the Victoria's Secret Fashion Show's limited edition collection. The hoodies, lined with faux fur, cost $100. The other pink girls told me to wait and buy the bling hoodies when the semi-annual sale starts in January. We get first pick on sale items. "Jackie, oh my God, don't kill me, but how's Panty Bar 2 coming?" Sim asks. "The yoga thongs, I can't even," Jackie says from the back of the bra room. "Girl, I know. When you're done, go help Bailey on Panty Bar 1," Sim says. "Okay," Jackie says. "Thanks, Sim," I say.
Rolling up the sleeves of my canary yellow pink hoodie, I recheck the trays. I tug a panty here and scrunch a pile there. At the front of the panty bar, I stare at the lace-trimmed thong tray. So little fabric, so much lace. Slippery, slithering panties that never lay flat. Lace-trimmed thongs can't hold on to each other like other panties, so the piles always topple over. I sweep up the row of panties, all the way from green to red, into my hands and throw them on top of a tray of ruched back bikini panties. With my thumb and forefinger, I pinch the floral lace of a neon green panty on top of the messy pile. The thong reads "Unwrap Me" in silver glitter. I chuckle and tuck a stray strand of long brown hair back into my bun. I place the thong on top of the sky blue panty that precedes it in the row. I smooth the edges of the lace, press the crotch flat, and reach for another Unwrap Me panty. Outside the metal gate that bars the store entrance, the voices of holiday shoppers heading home echo inside the skylight dome just outside of Sears. In a few minutes, I'll clock out and catch the 110 bus to UTM. I'll walk from campus to Homestead, the townhouse complex where Fraser lives. He will be waiting with dinner and one of our favorite shows loaded up on his computer. I finish the Unwrap Me pile and reach for a thong with bright green lace and a cartoon Christmas print. Jackie walks up, assesses the panty bar, and checks my thong tray. "Wow! Shit, good job on the thongs. They look so nice," she says in earnest. Her puffy, messy bun of hair bobs on top of her head. "Thanks," I smile shyly. Jackie rounds to the other side of the panty bar. She slides out a wooden drawer and lifts a smaller plastic drawer inside. Panties spill over the edges of the clear plastic in an explosion of colors. Jackie purses her lips into a kiss and sighs. Sim trots up to the panty bar and checks our progress. She bursts out in laughter, doubling over and clutching her sides. "Oh my God, look at this. I can't even handle it. Look, it committed suicide," Sim says. A thong dangles from the corner of a drawer, holding on by the edge of its lace. Jackie collapses into a pile of boy shorts to muffle her snorts. I cackle and giggle into the back of my hand. Sim snickers and pulls out a panty drawer for herself. We catch our breath. I smooth my piles of lace-trimmed thongs. Jackie battles with her destroyed drawer. Sim tucks and folds with expertise. A comfortable silence descends upon us. We work.
That was Panty Bar, written and read by Bailey Green. Now that we know of our narrator's folding prowess, we can be doubly skeptical of the judgment of the store manager in Bailey Green's third story tonight, Fired.
Fired by Bailey Green. Mainstream techno beats my eardrums as I fold the 60th pair of jeans. Usher's OMG plays for the sixth time in the past 4 hours. White, shiny mannequins stare out the store windows at the rain pounding the parking lot of the outlet mall in Vaudreuil. I yank another pair of jeans from the cardboard box sitting next to me. The label on a fresh pair reads size 8, boot cut with a small British flag embossed on the side. Part of the Jeans London by Bongo collection. No real brand names at Urban Planet. Today is my fourth shift since I was hired. I greet customers, restock shelves, and fold jeans. My manager, Lisa, promised I would be trained on cash soon. So far today, It's been all jeans, no cash. Oh, 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 my God, I sing under my breath. I peer at the other side of the table, searching for the rest of the London collection. Jeans, folded by size, lie flat on the table. Cubbies hiding underneath hold pants in other sizes and different washes. I hop over cardboard boxes to check the other side. The cord of my headset snags the corner of the table. The earpiece yanks my ear. My right foot, poised mid-step, flies up. I flail, arms windmilling. A few teenage girls giggle as they circulate around the sale racks several sections down. Jessica laughs at me from across the store. Bitch. I steady myself and grab the table. The earpiece winds up in my blonde hair. Well, shit, I mumble. T'as fini? You're done? Jessica appears behind me. Presque. J'ai une boîte qui reste. Almost. I have one box left, I tell her as I dislodge the earpiece from my hair. Jessica surveys my work. Her hands rest on the 3 inches of bare skin in between her belt and her crop top as she crosses over to the front cubbies. A tribal tramp stamp tattoo ripples across her love handles. She flicks her eyes to meet mine and then kneels and checks my work in the cubbies. I pick at my cuticles. Jessica sucks in her cheeks. T'as fait tout? You did them all? Ben, presque tout. Almost, I say. Jessica twirls a strand of deep purple-dyed hair between her fingertips. She rips a pile of jeans out of the cubby. She snatches piles from each cubby and whips every pair of jeans to the floor. Que t'es con, assis de tabarnak! How fucking stupid you are, she swears in French. Jessica, arrête, I say. She kneels on the floor and refolds the jeans. Jessica, please, just show me how to do it, I say. She ignores me. I twist the rings on my fingers. Just let me do it. I'm not stupid. I can fold a pair of jeans, I say. She snorts. I kneel beside her and snatch a pair of jeans. She wrenches them from my hands. Show me how to do it. Please. I'll fix it, I say. My throat clenches. Va au caisse. Ton shift est terminé anyway. Go to cash. Your shift is finished anyway, she says. I thought I still had another hour to go in my shift. Jessica jerks her chin in the direction of cash. I walk past the display of capri pants on sale, the women's section, the men's section, the shoe section, and finally past the accessory racks. I can sense the eyes of the other associates follow me. At cash, beneath a huge silver Urban Planet sign, Lisa scans barcodes into the system. I nod to her and walk behind the cash. Maybe next shift they'll finally train me on what I'm best at. Cash. Bailey, could you come over here? Lisa clicks a pen in her hands. Sure. I talked with the store manager, Sabrina, and we decided that you cannot continue to work here. You were late 3 times this week. We just can't have that. I raise my eyebrows and curl my upper lip. I was late because I was locked out of the store. 2 times, I stammer. We can't have someone on our team be so unreliable. She smooths her limp hair. Unreliable? I glare at the plastic wooden floor. Well, that works perfectly for me. I was going to quit today anyway. I type my employee number into the cash and punch out for the last time. Lisa fiddles with her locket, shifting from foot to foot. Oh, "You what?" she says. "This job wasn't really working out for me. I'm actually a lifeguard," I beam. "Well, you have a good summer," she says. "Yeah, you too. Have a good life, Lisa," I say to myself. I dart to the back of the store. The cement alley with an office chair and a microwave that serves as a break room. I grab my purse off the floor. They never gave me a locker. The ceiling fan rattles. I step into the bathroom. I pull off my headset and slam the set into its charger. I stare into the mirror. My nose turns red as tears of rage well in my eyes. I splash cold water on my cheeks. I kick open the door on my way back out to the store. The Hispanic girl working the fitting rooms hangs t-shirts as I pass by her. I stride to cash and slap my discount card on the counter. Lisa pinches the card with a polite smile. I spin on my heel and walk towards the front exit. Jessica admires her table of jeans. She smirks. I lock my eyes on the door. From my back pocket, I grab my pack of cigarettes, flip the cardboard lip up, and snake out a smoke. I stick it between my teeth. Jessica's smile dims a notch as a nicotine craving ignites. I avoid her eyes. I push out the front door and allow a nervous laugh to escape. I stomp to my silver Honda Civic, slip my key into the lock, and slump in the driver's seat. I slam the door shut. I roll my window down a crack and light my cigarette. The rain drums my windshield. Cars whoosh by on Boulevard de la Gare, and the burning tobacco crackles. I grip the steering wheel with my free hand, squeezing and releasing. My mind whirls. I'll phone Chanel, the head lifeguard at the Terrasse Vaudreuil pool, and see if the lifeguard position remains open. If not, it's only June. I have time. Sort of. Not really. I suck in a deep breath of chemicals. The cigarette trembles in my fingers. Fucking retail.
That was Fired, written and read by Bailey Green. We'll finish tonight's program off with a story that focuses on another challenge of working retail, the difficult customer. Let's listen now as Bailey Green reads her story, Good Practice.
Good Practice by Bailey Green. The irate woman prods the glossy 5x7s spread across the photo counter. She scratches the girth spilling over the back of the elastic waistband on her jeans as she berates Leia for the blurry quality of her prints. The files were not the problem. These are unacceptable. "I'm sorry, ma'am, but we print the digital files you submitted," Leia says. "Those files are fine." The woman jams her finger into the counter. "Do you have any other higher res copies?" Leia asks. I round my mouth into an O and apply a layer of sparkly, bubblegum-colored lip gloss. The photo kiosk hides me from curious customers. Leia, looking smart in her photo technician coat, clenches her teeth. The muscles along her jaw pulsate. I play with a highlighter in the pocket of my blue Walmart vest. "It's your printers that did this," the woman says. "Those files are fine. Just print them again." "I suppose it could have been a mistake on our part. I'll reprint them, ma'am. The woman sputters and stomps away. I check my watch. Technically, my shift doesn't start for another 4 minutes. Technically, I shouldn't be punched in and not working. Leia rolls her eyes as she turns back to the photo lab. I step out from behind the Kodak kiosk. Pardonne-moi, mademoiselle, I snap. Leia spins around, hair swirling around her head. She registers my vest first, my smirk second. Bitch, I thought you were a customer, she says. Bitch, that was the point, I say. I clip my red, yellow, and blue name tag to my vest. You have a dinner break later? I ask. Yeah, girl. Me too. All right. See you in a bit. I push off from the counter. Less than 2 minutes to get to cash. I jog through home accessories, cut across frozen food, and dart past women's wear. As the rows of caches appear, I slow my pace to a perky trot. Angie stands at the manager's podium. She moves a pencil down a page as she tallies the donations from Walmart's recent charity campaign. Her dark eyes peer at me above her red wire-rim glasses. Hello, Angie, I say. Cutting it a bit close, Bailey, she says. Sorry, a customer stopped me on my way up to the front. Ah, gotcha. Cash 3 tonight, my dear. Angie unlocks a cash drawer from inside the podium and heads to Express Cash. I fist pump behind her red vest. Express Cash is the best cash. David waves at me from Cash 8, towering gawkily over the magazine racks. I return the wave. Angie, tucking a mahogany curl behind her ear, punches in her manager codes. The cash springs open. She slides the pre-counted cash drawer inside and slams it shut. There you are, she says. Excellent. Oh, do you know when my dinner is by any chance? I believe you're scheduled for 7. Thanks, Angie. De rien. It's nothing, she says, and walks back to the platform. I hammer my user code and password onto the chunky keys and then hit log out. A cashier's user code tracks their operations, like transaction time and scanning speed. Quick, efficient rates pay off, literally. After 4 months working as a cashier at Vaudreuil's brand new Super Walmart, I've already received a raise. The number 3 above my cash glows to life as I flip the metal switch next to the telephone. Customers approach. I set the rotating belt to motion sense and glide objects from my right hand to my left. I scan hairbrushes, baby formula, socks, dog food, pajamas, and DVDs. At the end of the line, snaking out from the end of my cash, a young woman parks her overflowing cart. She leans on the plastic handle of the blue shopping cart, squishing the keys on her phone as she frantically texts. I lean out over the belt. Excuse me, ma'am? Her penciled-in eyebrows rise. Express cash, 8 to 12 items only, ma'am. We have several other caches open. She shoves her phone into the top of her velour pants and yanks her cart out of line. Items fly across the scanner, but the line of carts refuses to dwindle. I apply several more layers of lip gloss. In the few quiet moments in between customers, I scribble lists on receipt paper. I wonder if after work I should drive to Dorval and sleep at Josh's place, and if I have enough cigarettes for the next day, and if I have enough gas in my car to even make it to Dorval in the first place, and if my monologue is ready for Joan's text class tomorrow. As two teenage boys grab their Nerf guns, pretending to shoot each other all the way out of the store, a middle-aged man saunters up. His sausage fingers punch the numbers on a Palm Pilot. Silver chest hair curls out of his deep V-neck shirt. I scan his hair gel, frozen corn, gum, and condoms. He probes his inner ear with his pinky. Ça va être 25 et 38. It will be 25:38, I say, tripping over the last word, the dreaded number 8. In a thick joual accent, he fires back a response. Pardonnez-moi, I ask. T'es anglophone, hein? You're English, aren't you? He smiles, revealing a row of jagged, tobacco-stained teeth. I curl in my shoulders. Oui, I say.
Il faut qu'on pratique notre français un peu, hein?
Practice your French, he says. I speak French. I thicken my accent and grip the metal counter. We're in Quebec, he snorts in French. Here, we speak French. I blink at him. He flattens a 20 and a 10 on the conveyor belt. He hums as I peel them off, punch in the amount, and slide the bills in the cash. He drums his fingers on the counter. I drop his change in his hand and slide his bag to him. The corners of my eyes burn. Ducking my head, I grit my teeth as blood thumps in my ears. He shoves his hairy wrist through the plastic handles. Bonne pratique, ma petite. Good luck practicing, little girl. He winks and strides away. A woman, a halo of platinum hair framing her small head, peers over the edge of my keyboard. I scan her baby powder, a pack of men's athletic socks, deodorant, a frozen pizza, and an issue of Canadian Living. He was very rude to you, she says. A tear falls on the glass of the scanner. A red laser beam turns the tiny puddle crimson. I tug my ponytail tight, a fistful of hair in each palm. Another tear glides down my cheek. The woman finds my eyes. Don't you listen to people like that. That's very kind of you, I say. How would you like to pay? Credit, please. I slide the two plastic bags off the metal prongs and hand them to her. Have a nice night, I say. You too, she says. She pulls the strap of her leather purse up on her shoulder, lifts her bags, and walks out. A hand touches my back. I turn and face Angie. What just happened? She asks. Some jerk just told me I need to work on my French. I attempt a nonchalant laugh. Angie frowns. She squeezes my arm and curses in Portuguese under her breath. You should have asked to hear his English, Angie says. Probably wouldn't have understood my anglophone accent, I say. An elderly man shuffles to my cash and puts a bottle of vitamin C tablets and a box of Polydent on the belt. Angie slips away. Allô, bonjour, monsieur, I say. Allô, how are you? He responds in broken English. Très bien, et vous? Very well, and you? I say. Tellement bien, merci, mademoiselle. Very well, thank you, mademoiselle. His voice creaks as it relaxes into his mother tongue. I scan his items and take the coins from his soft, veiny hands. He takes his bag and slowly steps out of the store, one foot
at a time.
That was Good Practice, written and read by Bailey Green. That concludes Life Rattle number 1257. My name is Lori Callis. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Achtman. Tune in next Thursday night to hear more new stories written and read by Bailey Green.